This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh my gosh, I think that's me. Caught me off guard there for a minute. Rick Moore here with the Sunday morning wake-up call, halfway through the month of March already. But I have basketball fever. That's right. The NCAA tournament is about to start. That's got me all worked up. And the only thing to overcome that excitement today, guests in the studio, Board of Supervisor members, Ann Malik and David Slutsky. We'll start with ladies first. Ann, how are you?
Great, thank you.
Thank you for being here today. I know it's a beautiful, sunny Sunday.
As a farmer, I'm glad for the rain.
Oh, well, good, good. I'm glad to hear that you're a farmer as well. David, how about you?
I'm not a farmer, but I still like the rain.
David Slutsky here with us. David, from the Rio District and from the Whitehall District. And what are your proper titles with the Board of Supervisors? I mean, we scored big here.
I'm the vice chair.
And curiously, I'm the chair.
Wow. Yes. So you just go for the big guest, and sometimes you win out. All right. So David Slutsky and Malik here on the wake-up call this morning. It is the 15th of March, and let me take a moment and thank the Irish Alley Pub and Restaurant for allowing us to be on the air today. You can find them serving lunch and dinner in downtown Stanton. The Irish Alley includes a variety of cuisine and brunch on Sundays. You can dine inside or on the outdoor patio. The Irish Alley also offers a selection of local beer. Private parties of up to 40 can be accommodated at the Irish Alley across from the Byer Street parking lot. For more info, go find them. It's go look on IrishAlleyRestaurantAndPub.com. All right, let's just jump right into things. 979-0919 is the phone number here, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, because there are going to be a couple topics throughout the hour that go beyond Albemarle and Charlottesville to some of those folks, maybe in Harrisonburg's 95.1 or Lovingston's 94.7. Let's just ask a quick and easy question. And again, ladies first. And the biggest difficulty in being a member of the Board of Supervisors?
It's a challenge to represent the 11,000 voters in the district because they didn't elect me just to do what I want. They elected me to understand what they need and to try to make a community program for the area.
So representing people is the toughest part? Do you mean by here's what you want to do or here's what you think is maybe best, but the majority of the 11,000 are telling you different? Is that what you're saying?
You have to find a balance and use your judgment because they are electing you to use your judgment rather than running to them for everything. But it is very important to me to keep people in mind and understand the tenor of the district. That's why the town meetings I've been having are so important. And people enjoy that chance to speak to me directly.
David Slutsky, how about for you?
Well, Ann's right. That is the challenge. And for me, I've noticed since I've been on the board that a lot of the issues that we grapple with are far more complicated than I had originally planned on them being, and there are a lot of aspects to them, and it's our responsibility to communicate to our constituents what is going on, why we choose the policy choices that we make, and sometimes that outreach is difficult to do. It's simple for a voter to hear a soundbite on the television and decide, well, I want my elected to do X, and then their representative chooses to do Y, and they don't understand what the person's thinking. It's sometimes a challenge for us to explain ourselves, but we do our best to do that.
And that's why the both of you have the entire hour for the day. if there's any issue about a soundbite, well, you got 60 minutes to make it or correct it. All right.
Well, that's the power of radio.
The power of radio. Thing. And believe me, there is a lot of power standing behind this board today. And I'll do my best to not push the wrong button too many times. Money. Money is everything. Money is all the conversation. And I know that the budget is upcoming for Albemarle County and for many of the counties and cities in Virginia. What is the actual dollar shortfall that is staring us in the face?
guess that depends. Shortfall relative to what? The county has gone through a process each year of evaluating what we feel are the needs that we need to fund through taxes and whatever other revenues we can get. And beyond those, sometimes there are things that folks in the community would like to have. They may not be needs, but they're community preferences. And on the other hand, there's no magic number that defines where those are. And so sometimes our challenge is there's no specific magic number that we should do X dollars for our budget, and that will make everybody happy. So how do you balance wants and needs is really the challenge we get.
But right. When you start, when you sit down for one of the first or second meetings to talk about the budget, I would imagine that you're coming in with numbers based on last year's expenses.
Right.
And another number based on what you would think would be an educated guess on this year's revenues.
And this year, the complicating factor was the shortfall that we are undergoing in this current year's budget, the one that began in July 1st of 2008.
And so that's what I'm talking about is when you first sat down to go, this is the amount that we're short. So we need to trim a little bit. We need to raise a little bit. Or we need to raise a lot and trim nothing, or we need to trim everything and not raise anything. Wasn't there a number there?
Rick, no, there isn't. There are a couple numbers. If we came up with a budget based on what we projected last year would be the services provided this year. In other words, if we did a service neutral tax rate this year, meaning that the tax rate that would be required to provide all of the services, all of the level of staffing and so forth that we had anticipated spending this year when we adopted our five-year plan last year, we would have needed to have set the tax rate at 90 cents. Compared to that, there's a tax rate that one might describe as taxpayer neutral, and that's the tax rate at which the average single-family residential taxpayer would pay the same tax bill as they did last year. That would have been 74.2 cents. Neither one of those is correct, if you will, because we get to set the tax rate fresh every year. If we didn't pick a tax rate, it wouldn't slip into some number by default. It would be zero. It's not like we have a 71 cent tax rate for next year's budget because we set one at 71 cent this year. They're completely separate budgets, and the tax rates are completely independent. Mm-hmm. So we really start with a clean slate, have to decide what the budget should be and what the tax rate should be.
But we have had to make allowances in the county expenditures for an $8 million shortfall in the current fiscal year 09,
right,
which is eliminating more positions. Just this past Monday, we heard that there was another $377,000 shortfall, which means that the county executive is adding five more people who will not be replaced when they retire or get on to a new job from Albemarle County.
And that's just an eight-week decline.
That's right. So we were criticized last year for adding on the one penny or the $1.6 million in a lockbox just in case things fell. And I was very much hoping that I was wrong and they weren't going to fall, but they ended up falling significantly further. This year, with the economic concerns that so many of our residents have all across the spectrum, there was just an outcry to live with less, to do with less, to have as little burden as possible on people's pocketbooks so that they could then spend that little bit of money they had to do other things.
Ann Malik and David Slutsky here in the studio today as we talk about Albemarle County. But again, a lot of these topics are going to carry over to where you live if you're listening in Lexington or Lynchburg or Richmond. So dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877, WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number. I wouldn't expect Ann or David to be able to give you specific answers if you live in one of these other areas, but I believe that they could represent what those city council members, what those Board of Supervisor members are having to consider.
Yeah, across the Commonwealth, we share a lot of the same challenges. Throughout the Commonwealth, the General Assembly has, for example, abdicated on its traditional responsibility to fund transportation needs. So every jurisdiction in your listening area is struggling with the same problem. How do we fund transportation when the General Assembly has chosen not to do it? There are unfunded mandates that come to all local governments, from the federal and the state government, that local governments don't have a choice in. We have to fund. And as those unfunded mandates turn out to be increasing, that creates the same challenge, really, across the Commonwealth.
And don't forget, you can also send us an instant message if you'd like, WNRN Studio on the AOL instant message screen. You know, David, you brought up the topic of transportation, and I'm just going to ramble from topic to topic to topic. I have a lot of questions under budget and taxes and growth, and we're just going to fly back and forth, I think, as someone sort of pops into that area. One of the things that I hear a lot about and that I see, because I live on one of the, I guess, the back roads to take you around 29, is I would assume that there are a lot of people who dial your number. People can look online and find your number and ways to reach you and say, come on, I got all these people driving my back road, speeding along my back road, making it dangerous for me to pull out of my driveway. Why can't we do this on 250 or 29 or one of the other major highways around our area? What do you say to them? What do you tell me about the road that I live on becoming much more of a morning-evening commuter route, making it very dangerous for me to pull out of my driveway sometimes?
Yeah. People are looking for the easiest way to get to town and will bail off the main road when an accident happens or there's a cave-in on 29 that shuts that road down. Earliesville Road and Advanced Mills Road, which is where I live, ends up, and you as well, ends up being a primary diversion. And it is certainly an issue. One of the shoes that has dropped recently regarding road maintenance and VDOT funding is if you live on a road that has fewer than 750 cars per day, you're not going to get a snowplow or maintenance or potholes repaired. This is the way they're pulling back their responsibilities to focus on the more heavily traveled roads. To me, that's shocking, and I've had that in mind as I've been traveling around. Yesterday, we were on Prophet Road heading over to Stony Point in the evening. Came around a corner to find big orange barrels at the corner where the roadway has fallen away. I mean, you could just go right off and down a five-foot drop into a stream because everything is eroded away. Coming here today, there's an enormous pothole as you get on from Barracks Road onto the bypass. It's 4 feet across. You can't possibly avoid it. So something's going to have to give here.
Rick, you said what happens when we hear from constituents. We hear from a broad range of constituents. Some folks have called up and said, why haven't you guys in the county built the Western Bypass? And you know what I say to them is, well, first of all, even VDOT recognizes that the road as designed doesn't solve any traffic problems at all. 90% of the traffic on 29 is local traffic. The bypass is fairly short in length, and it isn't going to get the local folks, if you will, off of our roads. It'll also cost somewhere between a quarter and a third of $1 billion, and we're not getting $2 million out of the General Assembly this year for road money. So it's not a realistic solution, and it isn't a solution at all. What we have done on our board is tried to expand transit. We've recently gotten the enabling authority to a former regional transit authority, and if we have an expanded transit system and we continue to do our land use planning in a way that integrates transportation planning and land use planning, I think that's our best chance given the constraints that VDOT is under.
How does that happen, though? Because just to pull in some other listeners here, it seems as though the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County often disagree fully on some topics, and on others, there's endless conversation and little actual manipulation of solving the problem. And the topic of transportation and local transit, et cetera, has been discussed for years and years and years. And I can go back and say, hey, when I lived off West Main Street, we actually put in a bike lane. Okay. Has anything been done to Preston Avenue during that time? No. We've done some other things around the downtown mall. We knocked down some trees and built an extra lane on Route 29 going north, which was immediately flooded and actually did little for the traffic. That's probably not unfair. Did some things for the traffic, but hardly enough as to what the discussion was about in terms of solving it. So it's nice to say we need to do things with transit, but how do you get everybody on the same page and actually come to solutions that have productivity?
It's a great question. A couple things you brought up there, Rick. One is the collaboration between the city and the county. I think historically there wasn't nearly as good a dialogue as we have just in the last few years. There's been much more collaboration, and I think that's why we were able to achieve getting the Regional Transit Authority enabling legislation out of the General Assembly. We're in lockstep with the city on trying to solve some of the problems. There's disagreement about the Meadow Creek Parkway, but that is its own sort of nuanced issue, and it's a small piece of a larger transportation network. But I think you got to recognize, though, is that transportation funding is the problem here. And the reason for that problem is that the General Assembly, specifically the Republicans, not to sound partisan, but that's what this is. It's almost always a partisan vote. The Republicans that control the House of Delegates don't want to fund transportation funding because it's expensive. And in order to do it, they obviously are going to have to raise some form of taxation. And they don't want to do that. So by their not doing it, they continue to perpetuate the problem of increased congestion at the local government level. And we don't have the resources to deal with that problem.
And not to show my side of the argument here, but caller, hang on just a second. Wouldn't the Republicans, and it's easy again to make that stereotype, say, great, have all the money you'd want, but get rid of some of these social services. I don't want any more of this stuff where you send people with the drug addicts to court. I don't want any more of this stuff where you help somebody find a job who hasn't had a job in 2 years. You know, that if we cut certain areas, that they would say, fine, put all the money over there.
Rick, we asked the General Assembly this year for two bills to help our localities deal with transportation. One of them was the enabling legislation to form the Regional Transit Authority. But the other piece of legislation was really an interesting bill. We asked the General Assembly to give us permission to ask the voters through a referendum if they wanted to raise their own taxes to pay for transportation projects, both roads and transit. They didn't even trust the voters to make that decision. So it's one thing to say, well, some voters would like to see us make choices between X or Y, but we actually asked for permission from these guys in Richmond to ask the voters if they wanted to increase their own taxes to pay for transportation, and they wouldn't trust us. They wouldn't trust the voters to do that. So we're really kind of stuck.
All right, 11:18 here on the Wake Up Call. Ann Malik and David Slutsky from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors here. I got a caller on the line, but caller, hang on just a second because I want to get the weather, et cetera, out of the way before we get to your call. So the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, light rain all day today. Highs in the mid-40s, cloudy with a chance of rain tonight. Lows in the low 40s, cloudy with a chance of rain tomorrow. Highs of about 49 degrees right now. It's some light rain across the listening area, 42 in the valley, 41 in Lynchburg, 43 in Richmond, and a nice 40 degrees here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, and let's thank Alt Energy of Charlottesville for their support today, designing and installing solar energy systems in Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Alt Energy solar systems are now practical and reliable and can pay for themselves in just a few years while reducing your carbon footprint. You can also make a difference by showering instead of taking a bath and having your kids turn off the lights when they leave the room. More can be found at altenergyincorporated.com. And we all know there's lots of radio stations and other music sources out there, but there's only one program that brings it to you, like the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. And the only reason we can do this is because of listeners like Kathy Hinchy, Brenda Clement-Jones, and Sarah Landon, all who supported us in the Fall Fund Drive. Also because of program underwriters like the ones you hear from this hour, as well as Integral Yoga and Pizza Bella. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about the Wake Up Call and other programming you enjoy on WNRN. And be sure to support us during the upcoming fund drive beginning Monday, March 23rd. All right, we're back in action here with David and Ann. And we have Gary. Hey, Gary.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Glad that you had the two supervisors on here this morning. Before I pose my question, I want to give full disclosure here. This is Gary Grant. I was David's opponent 4 years ago for Board of Supervisors race, so I want to make sure the public knows that That's who I am. It has nothing to do with the question now, but just so everybody knows where this call is coming from. I get real upset when David uses a term like the General Assembly has abdicated its responsibilities. What makes me upset about that is that I believe most of the money that goes to Richmond comes from taxpayers around the state. So when he says the General Assembly has abdicated its responsibility, it's almost like he's calling, saying to me, I, the taxpayer, haven't stepped up to the plate enough to spend more money. It's very interesting, you know, we criticize as localities that Richmond doesn't send us more money, but that money comes out of all of our pockets, whether it's from this locality or another locality around the state. So I'll make that comment. My question has to do with the forums that Ann and David have been running around the county on recently, and I applaud them for getting out and doing that. David's, you know, he's the chairman now, and he has to get out more, and he may or may not be running for election, but his seat is up for election this fall, and it is interesting to me that he seems to be more visible right now than he was in the first 3 years of his term. My question is, on the meeting that you held in Earliesville, I think it was March 3rd, 12 days ago, I submitted five questions that I wanted answers to regarding the budget, and I believe I heard both of them say to the 45 people in the audience, you will get answers to your questions. Well, it's 12 days later, I've not even received an indication that I'm going to get an answer to my question, so I would just like to have them talk about how they get out their answers to constituents and what is a timely way of doing that. And I'll just hang up and listen to the answer.
And first of all, I'll let the two of you take care of that. Gary, thanks for listening on a regular basis.
Yeah, and also thank you, Gary, for participating in the community dialogue on a regular basis. You know, Gary and I were opponents 4 years ago, but Gary's actually been a valuable contributor to the community discourse. He was a participant, as he just indicated, at a recent town hall meeting. And, Gary, yeah, you did share with me a series of questions, and I have in turn gone back and asked a couple questions of staff, a couple of whom were not available the end of last week. They were on training and vacation. And we have till April 1st. Before we actually have to move forward with our budget. And I'm certainly expecting to get some feedback to the questions that I asked before then. And what I will likely do in your case is just communicate directly with you because you've asked me very specific questions and I know how to get a hold of you. Sometimes we're asked sort of broader-based questions by folks in the public, sometimes directly, and sometimes they broadcast them through emails to all of the supervisors at the same time. And it varies as to how different supervisors respond. When somebody offers up a constructive suggestion like you have, hopefully they usually get a direct response from their representatives.
And I certainly make an effort to respond at least to everybody who is in the Whitehall District because it enables us to stay in touch better. And I hope that people, when they do send us emails, to identify what district they're in. It would be very helpful.
And just to follow up on Gary's point, there was a town hall meeting in Earliesville where I actually asked, I explained to the 45 or 50 people in the room the logic that had gone into my talking about raising the tax rate to provide for some safety nets. And in fact, today the Daily Progress has an op-ed piece that I wrote that explains that logic a little bit more thoroughly. But when I asked the question, after I explained my concerns to the folks in the room, there was one hand that went up that thought that budgeting extra money for rainy day fund was a good idea this year. And everyone else in the room put their hand up and said they didn't. And I've gotten that same kind of feedback through all of my interactions with my constituents in the last month. And it's for that reason that I did a significant turnaround, if you will, on my position on the tax rate, because it was clear to me that even though I'm very worried about not having sufficient, if you will, backup money or rainy day money for the uncertainty in our budget or in our revenue picture this year, the will of the voters was overwhelming. Most years there's a split between people who say, raise my taxes to pay for affordable housing, to take care of the 20% of the county that live in poverty, to go ahead and do what you can on transit and so forth. And then about half the population comes and says, you can't raise their taxes. We can't afford to live
really?
Here if you do.
Yeah. Because that was one of my questions, which is for those who have been following this, and I always talk about the first paragraph, folks who read the headline, read the first paragraph, out of 40 and then move on. So the depth of the understanding isn't always there. And in this case, the 74.2% tax rate for real estate. And David, I believe this, and I'm not going to quote it in any way, but my understanding is that you made mention that you had changed your mind on where to go with the tax rate because of the feedback that people didn't want to raise the tax.
It was overwhelming this year.
And I'm overwhelmed at the thought that anybody at any time would ever say raise my taxes. I would assume that you would get this, you would have gotten this in 2002 when everybody was supposedly making all this money and their real estate taxes were going through the roof. So now my tax rate, if you raise it so you can save some money now, I got to pay way more in taxes than I might have otherwise.
Rick, you say way more, and it creates the impression in listeners' minds that we pay an extremely high tax burden here in Albemarle County. If you look at the facts, it turns out that compared to the other 11 jurisdictions in the Commonwealth that are counties that are urbanizing, populations of 90,000 and above like we are, the median tax rate adjusted for various factors, the Weldon Cooper Center puts out a publication every year that has those numbers. The median for that group, our peer communities, is a 75-cent rate. And on that same scale that Weldon Cooper put out, if you adjust for the revenue sharing money we give Charlottesville, we're at 49 cents. Our tax rate is one of the lowest among our peer communities. If you look at taxes as a percentage of household income, we're comparable to the midpoint in Virginia. Northern Virginia, they're way over at the top of the spectrum. But Albemarle County is not overly taxed in the sense that we're disproportionately more taxed than other areas in the Commonwealth. We're low compared to other areas. So that's why a lot of people come to our board members as individuals and sometimes at the public hearings saying, I want you to increase spending on X, Y, and Z, as opposed to I don't want you to do it because I can't handle the tax burden.
And again, Ann Malik and David Slutsky here from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. And I understand what David's saying about how in this Commonwealth scheme of things, maybe our tax rate is proportionately low. But wouldn't you find a large number of people who would say that in the Commonwealth scheme of things, living in this area for things non-tax related is proportionately high? That because we are in this little bubble in the center of the state, that Charlottesville, Albemarle costs a lot to live here.
We have the second highest cost of living in Virginia as compared with Northern Virginia. But the things that we can control on the Board of Supervisors, a lot of them are related to the property tax rate, because that's the biggest taxing burden that we...
Right, so you're balancing out my everyday cost of driving, eating, shopping, and what I either paid for my home or rent my home for, and you're balancing that by helping me with a lower real estate property tax.
Well, or an average one for the Commonwealth, which is low for large urbanizing communities. Mm-hmm. That's right. It's a tough spot to be.
Right. And we have heard from people who have said my tax burden is fine, or please increase the support you give to a particular program. And even the folks who are saying please don't raise my taxes understand that our taxes are what we pay to have our community services, to provide the safety net for the people who cannot provide for themselves, to do the core services that government should provide. And so there is, I think this year especially, a noticeable support for the fact that the people across the spectrum understand the deliberations we're having, the struggles we're having, trying to keep it as low as possible and still provide the services that are essential to our community. And one thing that I suggested in the past and we'll bring up again is to have a program with a letter that will go out in the tax bill to ask anyone who would like to provide an extra amount of funds for a particular program to send it in and to have a place that they can do that. Surrounding counties have for many years provided this avenue for their citizens and as a way to provide extra funds. Considering that one of the high schools in the county has raised over $500,000 apparently for a field for their children, the students to play on, means to me that there is a great reserve of funds out there that people might choose to contribute.
Yes,
it's not going to change
the whole. I did roll my eyes at that, by the way.
It's not going to change the whole scheme of things, but it is going to help people to participate. And people across the spectrum also are very supportive of the schools, and they understand that their future employees are the students in our schools today. And so many people have said to me, I understand that I want you to fund the schools to make sure that there isn't damage done to the children in the classroom. The school board is encouraged to find all the savings they can administratively. The county staff is certainly working to pare down their or increase their efficiencies and pare down the people that they have. We're going to be having 55 eliminated positions by July 1st of 2009. And that's almost 9% of our former staff. Now, certainly the demands on staff in some departments have fallen because the economy has changed and there isn't as much community development process work to do. But there are also other departments where the demands have increased, and so there is considerable shifting with existing staff. David.
11:31 here on the Wake Up Call. We are talking with Ann Malik and David Slutsky, Vice Chair and Chair from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. You can dial us up with your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS, or send your instant message to WNRN Studio. I want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. Staff at Blue Ridge do area runs and hikes themselves and can help you with anything you need to know. Fit you with footwear, gear, and performance clothing to fit your outdoor pursuits and lifestyle. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Berks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They have two locations in Richmond and can be found at brms.com. Dave?
Yeah, Rick, Ann was reminding me of one other interesting piece. There are a lot of things in our budget that are fairly big ticket items that we could choose to not go forward with. Ann and I were the only two members of our board, for example, who objected to spending the $200,000 on those Turk fields. We objected on two grounds. One is we felt that they weren't, we didn't have confidence yet that they were safe for our children to play on. And number two, we thought that it was inappropriate to spend that much money at a time like this when we knew there was an active fundraising effort in the community that we thought would be sufficient to cover it. That's why the schools themselves, interestingly enough, put no money in towards those turf fields. I think they were going to rely on private investors, if you will. We had an opportunity to vote. Ann wasn't on the board at the time. We voted for the Crozet Library. It was, in my opinion, an absolutely essential building. It had to be built, but I thought it was twice the size that it needed to be, so I voted against it. There are issues in the budget that we don't all agree on, like, for example, land use taxation. A lot of folks have complained that we pay $18 million to the city of Charlottesville under revenue sharing, and what are we thinking? But a lot of folks don't understand we have a similar amount of money that we don't collect because we provide a tax break, if you will, to rural area landowners through the land use tax program. And it's about $18 million a year. And it turns out that on 60% of the acreage in Albemarle County, we lose tax revenue because we tax those properties based on land use values, which are a fraction of their fair market value. But we in turn have to pay the city of Charlottesville under the revenue sharing agreement a dime based on the fair market value of those parcels. So literally on 60% of the county, we're losing tax revenue, and it's the 40% of the county, mostly in the growth area, that's subsidizing these rural area landowners.
Don't a lot of people make the argument that many people who don't deserve to have their property tax-free because of its rural, what's the organization, ACE, acquired?
Well, there's a program the county purchases conservation easements, the ACE program, of conservation.
But there's an argument that's made that many people who have far enough money and sort of have these luxury farms are tax-free because they are not being turned into subdivisions. Is that? I mean, I recognize that the argument is out there, and I'm curious as to what the response would be. Ann?
Well, I think there's a bit of a mixed metaphor there. So one of the
reasons that
we have to increase the confidence and reliability of our land use program and to make sure that the people who are participating actually are complying with the regulations. This year, for the first time since 1973 when the program was instituted, landowners will be obligated to fill out a revalidation form. And they're going to have to show what way they are complying with the land use program. And if they do not comply or cannot comply or don't want to comply with the, what the program is set up to do, then they will no longer be in the land use validation, the land use value taxation program. So this has been put in to support agriculture, to keep the agricultural way of life as its scenery and its water quality protection, the open space protection, which is provided at the farmer's effort, but provided as a benefit to the rest of the county residents. I think that was the thought process in 1973 when the program was adopted. We do not have the luxury to micromanage the values. We use the SLAAC values that for the value of the land under its particular uses that are established by the government in Richmond. So I'm a proponent of the program. I think that it helps tremendously. The actual agricultural land provides more taxation than it needs in services.
David, are you a proponent of the program?
Not at all. I think that there's one instance where land use taxation is absolutely appropriate, and that's when its original intent was to recognize that farms on the periphery of the urban landform that were used for row crops, if you will, or other agricultural uses, they couldn't generate enough income to pay the property taxes if they were taxed based on their speculative value, meaning that a developer might pay an awful lot per acre for that farmland, and therefore their property taxes were going up. So they created this appropriate fiction, if you will, called land use taxation, which said, in order to keep farmers on their farms, we will recognize that if they were to continue farming, their land would only be worth X, and so we'll tax them at that much lower level. The problem with it for Albemarle County, as I see it, is we have, unfortunately, not very many acres in row crops. We have an awful lot of acres in agricultural, that is cows and horses. We have a lot more acreage that's in forestry. And here's the problem. If somebody puts their land in conservation easement, they have truly given up the speculative value that a developer might pay for that land so they could then subdivide it. I think those people absolutely should be getting the land use tax level and into perpetuity, since that's how long their conservation easements are for. If a farmer owns land and has a bunch of development rights on it and they choose to take them off the market for now, but they want to hold on to them so that they can sell them later or their children can sell them out of the estate, they're basically speculators, and the taxpayers are subsidizing their speculative investment. You raise the issue, Rick, of do those farmers demand fewer services and therefore they shouldn't be paying a higher tax rate? Well, it turns out that when you purchase a 100-acre parcel in the rural area, you pay a price for that entire parcel with a house on it that reflects all of the things about that house that are positive and negative. One of the disamenities, as they are called in economics, of a rural property is that it does not receive nearly the same level of county services as perhaps an urban parcel would. And that is why in the marketplace people pay a lower price for rural land per acre, considerably lower price per acre for rural land. So they already are reflecting in the property values, in the purchase prices, the lower services that those parcels receive, and that is in turn reflected in their tax rate.
11:38 here on the Wake Up Call. Ann Malik, David Slutsky. Question, an internet question for the two of you as we talk about the monies. In need of income, is there consideration for matching the city's cigarette tax? For those who don't smoke or don't have anything aware of this, the city has an extra tax. I'm not sure how much it is. I think it's 40 cents or so that is built into the retail price of a pack of cigarettes that goes through the city's funds, I believe. Albemarle County does not have that tax, so if you buy a pack of cigarettes in Charlottesville, you pay 40 cents more than you would if you bought the pack of cigarettes outside of the city limits.
This is a good example of the differences between cities and counties. Counties are the agents of state government. We do not have a lot of power locally without the blessing of Richmond. So in order for us to do that, as you propose, we would have to go and get enabling legislation from Richmond. Probably the same subcommittee that told us to take a hike when we went down there earlier this year about our referendum question. They basically said, you and Albemarle, get out of here and get your own house in order and don't come down here asking us to be able to give you any tax money. They were incredibly hostile, even in a public forum like that. I was shocked. But the we need to have that enabling legislation before we can accomplish it. Our meals tax, hotel tax, all those which we are enabled to do, we are at the maximum state allowed rate now. That was one of the first things that several of us pounced on earlier in the year to make sure that we're not leaving any money on the table.
Has the cigarette tax been discussed by anyone? Is it something that you might propose to the mean and awful people just to ask to give it a shot?
We'd love to get it.
It's worth a try.
Yeah, I was going to say we'd love to get it, but I'm not sure it is worth a try because we know what the answer is going to be. I mean, if they wouldn't let us hold a referendum where we trust the voters to make their own minds up on a tax, why would they let us levy a cigarette tax? It only makes sense. That's why they don't want to do it.
All right, 11:40 here on the Wake Up Call with Ann and David from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
This year's Virginia Festival of the Book goes from insight into the economy to tips on spying and from vampires to Jewish girls gone wild. The Hook takes a preliminary look. Someone else files suit on Halsey Minor, this time over his landmark hotel loan. And what else is happening at Side from the Book Festival? Check out The Hook's calendar of events. The Hook, they offer pictures for those of you who don't even like to read. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for being with us today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom t-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses, and maybe even for the county. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And don't go anywhere, because Drew Thompson will be here at noon for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Elton John or Christopher Cross, but you will hear Foo Fighters, The Offspring, and Radiohead. Requests always welcome. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music and Basil. All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call. Back in action with Ann Malik and David Slutsky from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. David, Gary brought up the question, and just to go back to him, the real estate tax has been in the news a lot. You have been quoted in the newspaper, and I believe you, if you didn't say it exactly, you came really close to saying it here today, that you changed your mind on previous thoughts about what to do with the tax because of constituents, and your mindset said, you know what, this may be the better way to go. Instead of making it 90, instead of asking county residents to pay more, let's keep it at this. But Gary said, hey, you know what? You're up for re-election. Did that have anything to do with this?
Oh, of course it has something to do with it. If you read the op-ed piece that I wrote in the Progress today, I start off by pointing out that it's appropriate for elected official, for local government officials to be elected, unlike the judiciary. In the case of the judiciary, we want them to be able to render an honest and objective opinion their own as to what the state of the law is and not be vulnerable, if you will, to having to second guess what voters might think. On the other hand, we want to have local government officials to have that kind of accountability because the issues we deal with aren't abstract concepts like justice per se. We're dealing with the taxpayers' money. We deal with the financial aspects of government, and we also deal with people's rights. And whenever government regulates human behavior and whenever government regulates private individuals' money, they should be accountable to the taxpayers. So what happened this year is, as always, I went through the analytical process and started to think about what I thought the tax rate ought to be. By the way, I, from the very get-go, said I was against the 90-cent tax rate, but it's convenient for some folks on the other side of the argument to mischaracterize my position. I merely said that the 90-cent tax rate would be the rate we'd have to set in order to provide the same level of services that our budget contemplated for this year when we adopted our five-year plan last year. It would be a service-neutral tax rate. But when I brought it out for purposes of transparency, but at the same time, I acknowledged that I couldn't support that high a tax rate, and I haven't changed in that view at all. But I thought we should be somewhere in between that and the 74.2 cents that we're going to be at. And the reason for it was I'm concerned about uncertainties, contingencies. I also thought we should be accelerating capital projects instead of delaying them at a time when the bidding environment is as favorable as it is today. But since there was such an overwhelming and very clear voice from my constituents, it was appropriate for me to respond to it and represent their wishes. And I think that's the logic that went through every member of the Board of Supervisors' minds this year. It wasn't close in the community discourse this year. So did I do that because I'm running? I don't know if I'm running yet, to be honest with you. That's a decision I definitely have not yet made. But I would have done this in any year where the feedback was overwhelming in one direction or another.
I think you should run. Whether or not people out there want to vote for you or not, I think you provide an excellent conversation about any of the topics.
Thank you.
And the phrase service neutral has been tossed around here on the program a few times.
Right.
We know that if we're not going to, if the tax is not going to be 90 cents, the money has to come from somewhere, or you start on the other side and you trim things. If we're not going to have a service neutral tax rate, then what services are up for discussion? And please don't say all of them. What services are up for discussion in terms of being trimmed?
Mm-hmm.
Or which ones are up for discussion in terms of having the most trimming done to them?
Things that are not core services. Core services meaning education, public health and safety, the essentials to keep our citizens safe and alive. Everything beyond that is up for discussion.
Such as?
And, well, all the various departments. The county staff has already trimmed more than 10% operating expenses for the last 2 years in their all the consumables, all the non-personnel. And then after that, they went to the personnel level, and that's where the 50, now 55 frozen positions, eliminated positions, are coming in. Because when you have a local government, which is a service agency, behind those services are people. And over 80% of our expense is personnel. So the people have to go in order to reduce the budget, and that's been done so far through attrition, through retirements, people moving out of this cycle. There's also an incentive program to encourage more people who are of an age to retire to take advantage of that now, and the encouragement is necessary because of the economic uncertainty and people's unwillingness to leap out of their job and walk away from their health insurance and that sort of thing. So there is an incentive to help that happen. And that is the way that we will achieve a balanced budget for the current year. And then going forward, there's a further reduction for fiscal year 10, which will start in July 1st of 2009.
So I don't have to worry about my fire department, my EMTs. What else would qualify as health and safety?
Police on the street.
Police on the street.
Now, we still have things that are being put off, such as additional fire machinery, additional fire houses to provide even quicker service, additional hiring. All the hiring is frozen in these departments. There may be some stimulus funds that are allowed to help us bring on some more police officers sooner, but there is a hiring freeze, just as there are no raises for anybody in county government any level.
We have frozen some core positions. There are several police officer positions that are frozen, and we're more than 20 police officers below the level of police officers that we contemplate in our comprehensive plan. We have a position to recruit volunteers into our fire and rescue system, and that's a frozen position. And we're desperately dependent upon our volunteers to have an effective fire and rescue system, and yet, you know, that's one of those things that is still frozen. So we do have some core services that have already started to experience the consequences of the economic downturn, and it could get worse, unfortunately.
Let me take this call, and then I want to get back to that. And we got Dewey from Louisa. Hey, Dewey.
Hey, you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay, this economic slowdown is a bad thing, but I tell you, it seems to be a good thing out here in Louisa County. We had growth like unbelievable. The subdivisions popped up. It just was everything happening so fast that it seemed like something was wrong. And turns out that's precisely what would happen. But darn if it didn't seem like we were being run out, the old-timers and the people who've been living here for a while. Our roads out here are becoming like racetracks. We can't get our speed limits changed on these little rural roads that bind driveways and whatnot. You can't go to the VDOT anymore. You've got to go through your board of supervisors to try to get the road signs up. So I'm glad for the economic slowdown.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dewey.
All right.
The fewer building permits requested and fewer rezonings coming in is giving county governments all across the area a chance to refine their processes to catch up on administrative tasks and try to be ready to go forward when the economy heats up again, to go forward in a better way.
Julie, you raise a relevant point about how some of the growth that used to take place in Albemarle and Charlottesville has been pushed out into the surrounding counties. We haven't experienced the level of growth here that you all have. We're down well under 2% growth per year for the last many years. But part of the problem is, the reason for that is, our cost of housing has gone through the roof. And affordable housing is an issue that requires an investment of county government. The impact folks are calling for the county to step up and get involved in funding and taking a responsibility for making housing affordable. And it's sort of ironic, but we can't really do it at a time like this because of the economic downturn.
But there's been a conversation about raising the fees for developers. Correct?
Right.
I mean, a lot, from like $700 to look at a plat to $4,100?
We have already approved a pipeline of some, I don't know, what is it, 30,000 residents, some huge number of residential units. We have plenty of already approved capacity. So I'm not worried that those fees, while they're being resisted by the developer community for understandable reasons, I don't think that we're unduly burdening the affordable housing market by doing that.
No, and I wouldn't either.
Even before any regulations were changed, there was no affordable housing being built in Albemarle County.
And there probably still won't be.
17 years since those fees were addressed. And it's a difference. I mean, somebody's going to pay for the cost of those projects. And so is it fair for the taxpayers as a whole to, through their staff time, be paying those fees? During the time that I ran in 2007, people were outraged that the developers were not paying their fair share for all this development. And even the 6,000 dwelling units that were approved in the previous 4 years in just the Whitehall District left us with a $14 million hole as far as the costs we know we're going to have, but the developers were not paying it. So there's definite support for having people pay their fair share as they do business in this community.
Yeah. All right. The fees get paid. It's just a matter of who's going to pay.
We were talking about how the fire and police departments here in Albemarle County are missing people that they need to do the job as projected by the county. Let's spend the last few minutes talking about the stimulus package from the federal government. Can either of you tell me what the expected dollars might be and some of the conversation that's been had as to how it might be used?
The details so far are sparse, but I understand there's approximately $2 million per year for 2 years.
$2 million?
Per year, okay. That will go to the school department for the Title I and special ed funds. That is going to be discussed in the combined budgets going forward. They're also funding for 3 police officers to be added, I understand, to our police roster outside of our budget. And then there are other projects which are being run on a grant, a competition grant, sort of community block grant type process through the state, and we won't know how those turn out for a while. The Crozet Library that David mentioned is the number one library project in the state of Virginia for some stimulus funds. Whether it will come to us or not, we don't know, because a lot of the judgment will be based upon which communities are the hardest hit economically, have the highest unemployment. And we certainly have challenges here, but we are not in the same situation as some of the counties that have 15% unemployment right now.
Rick, I mean, it's a great question. What about the stimulus packages? And Ann's description was perfect. But let's step back and think generally about how much money does Albemarle County get out of the federal and the state pot of money. We get an unusually low percentage per amount per capita as compared with other comparable jurisdictions. And you might ask, well, why are we getting hosed here? Why do they get a much higher amount per capita? And the reason has a lot to do with, A, the fact that our tax rate is low, and B, the fact that we have an awful lot of our land in land use taxation. And based on the formulas that are used to drive some federal and state funding programs, we get the short end of the stick on that. That's one of our compounding factors that makes our budget a challenge.
Well, you also have this reputation of being a place where you have McMansions, you have very large and very fancy homes, you have a lot of well-to-do and famous people living in the area, so you can't possibly be in but so much need.
Except we did a study, the county did a study, my and others' urgings, about 2 years ago, of the state of poverty in Albemarle County. It's a conversation we don't often have in this community, and that's really a shame. It turns out that 20% of Albemarle County's residents, one in five, live in poverty, as we define it. And there's a lot of folks who just live in barely above poverty, don't exactly have McMansions out in the rural area. So to suggest that Albemarle County is, and you're not saying this, it's true that there's a perception out there that we're flush with cash. It's not necessarily matched by reality.
Mm-hmm. 11:56 here on the Wake Up Call. Our last few minutes with Ann Malik and David Slutsky from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And let me take a moment to thank 45fix.com. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor at 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com. That's the number 4 and the number 5 and the word fix.com. All right, another internet question for you. Why aren't windmills allowed? Windmills, alternative energy. My understanding is, wasn't there, and I can never keep this, it's the Board of Architectural Review and the Architectural Review Board. I can never keep the city county name, say, I believe it's the Planning Commission for Albemarle County. Was
actually
having a conversation about
it's coming
whether or not you can have this. And the initial, my memory is that the initial reaction from them was no.
They went back into
discussion about it.
According to our existing rules and regulations, there wasn't anything to allow the staff to permit them. But it has come through the discussion of the Planning Commission and will be coming to the board soon, I understand, for discussion to allow or not windmills in residential areas in the rural area.
Why wouldn't they be allowed to do it?
Well, we have a height restriction. We have a height restriction that we put in place, among other things, to make sure that we didn't get tons of ugly cell towers populating our rural areas. We have one of the most restrictive and thoughtful cell tower ordinances in the country that many other jurisdictions throughout the country are starting to replicate because it was so well done. So there's been a general bias against putting big structures out in the rural area that might disturb the aesthetic experience of the rural area. Unfortunately, that runs right in the face of our issues with respect to energy independence and climate change. I actually initiated this current effort to get an ordinance revision in Albemarle County that would allow for wind turbines under certain circumstances, and that's been going through process, and it is working its way back to the Board of Supervisors. I have an unusual view in that I think that the turbines make sense in the rural areas because of the overwhelming benefit that we get from them. The only real disadvantages that I can see are, number one, aesthetics, and that's not unimportant, but it's not at the top of my priority list. And there are some migratory birds and bats that might fall victim to these spinning turbines. On the other hand, if we don't put turbines up and we end up being continuing to depend on fossil fuels, an awful lot of those same birds and bats are going to die because of air pollution. So I think that we need to do it either way.
All right. I want to thank both of you for coming into the program today. Just tons of topics that we didn't go far in depth with, and some that we didn't even get to at all on my list. I hope you'll return again on a future show.
Thank you very much.
All right. Ann Malik and David Slutsky from the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. Supervisors. I don't know why I can't say anything. Next week, I'll still have basketball fever. Pete Ronayne will be here for you. But please save a few dollars for the fundraiser that will be here in 2 weeks. I'll take your quarters. all the way up to your large checks. Drew Thompson up next.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.